presentation and thinking about the hashgacha business, it comes to mind that being a mashgiach is in a way similar to being a Rebbe, because the Rebbe is not a very lucrative position. I don't know about being a mashgiach, but surely in order to qualify, it has to be a labor of love. It has to be someone who's really devoted and feels it's very important, and also to be a Talmud Chacham, to be capable. A lot of ingredients go into being a mashgiach, if I could use that word. And we had the pleasure to have Rabbi Yosef here, I think it was 10 years ago, because yesterday I gave a shiur on kosher or non-kosher medications, and somebody told me I could say it again because for 10 years I didn't speak about it. After 10 years, everyone doesn't remember that well, myself included. I had a tape, Baruch Hashem. And I remember when you spoke here last time, it was a delightful presentation. So it's my pleasure to have Rabbi Eisen come here and inform us about the area of kashrus. Thank you very much for coming. Just standing in the corner for a little while hearing Rabbi Gnack's presentation, I must tell you that a lot of questions were brought out, a lot of points rather were brought out through the, you know, very active questioning, and I would hope that perhaps we'll do the same and just after just a bit of factual information. But first of all, I must say that I understand the seriousness of this particular session just simply from the way that Rabbi Avram Wolpin literally called me almost a dozen times between the time that he first contacted me about a month and a half ago and now, so I'm sort of a bit inspired not only to present to you information which I think is really relevant to every single person, but rather I think that this information has to be really absorbed from perhaps a different angle than we would have internalized this information about a half a year ago. What I believe, and this is something which has been said by many gedolim in America post the terrible incident that took place at the end of August, that navigating through kashrus in today's age, I think there has to be sort of a prefix to that, and that is being really encouraged and having the chizik to do it properly. Because that was the message that I heard personally from Rav Matzio Solomon at the OU about 2 months ago when he spoke magnificently. And he really, his emphasis was that kashrus sometimes is taken for granted. And when that happens on a mass level, the Rabbeinu Shalom sends us a message to wake us up and sort of shake us from the very foundation. And I believe if this didn't shake us up from the very foundation, nothing will. And I think we have to take the position just to handle our pantries and our choice of where we eat and what we eat with a bit more seriousness and not be complacent with just your perfunctory information or just knowledge that you might have. No different, I think, that anybody that's really serious about Hilchos Shabbos, or for that fact in the Kollel of my shul, they're learning Hilchos Zimun. Hilchos Zimun, making a mezumen, has myriads of halachas. If somebody, you know, has an interest in that and wants to take the sugya and understand it, he has to spend time. But perhaps that's not really so relevant to all of us, but kashrus is certainly most probably the most relevant issue that we deal with. I just asked a Adam Gudley yesterday, could he tell me how much of Shas, how many of the Masechtas deal with food that we eat in one way or the other? A hard question to quantify, but it's a very large chaticha, if you will, in Chazal, and I think that really speaks volumes. That we really have to become a little bit more sensitized to our own achrayus. I just want to share with you and open up with a story which I think gives us a sense of how Rabbanim Achshirim, that really are responsible to the community, how they approached their responsibility towards kashrus. The senior member, the founder of Herzog Wines, which evolved into Kedem Wines, said over the following story. I heard Feish Herzog say over the story, must probably was about 10 years ago as well. He said that his minig was that he would take the tzeilim of Rav Zecher Tzadik Levracha from time to time to the different wineries, to the bottling plants. And there was one particular time that the tzeilim of Rav said, I don't need a ride, I'll meet you there. And he goes to the winery and he's looking for the tzeilim of Rav, no tzeilim of Rav, nobody in sight. All of a sudden, he looks up at one of the towers, which was several stories high, and all of a sudden he sees like a little, from the distance he sees a figure hunched over on the top of that ladder. Now normally the Tzeilim Rav was an elderly man. He did not climb with such alacrity. He didn't just jump up on those ladders. It took him a while to send those ladders, and he usually had help. And he just, when he noticed that Tzeilim Rav was up there, he dashed up the very large vessel, this container, and he saw the Rebbe was hunched over the opening of this gigantic vat, and he had a tillum in his hand. And he said, Tzeilim Rav, he says, what are you doing? He said, what am I doing? He said, tomorrow, he said, you know that they're going to bottle. He says, from these bottles, they're going to be making Kiddush, they're going to be Yotzar B'Koisos, they're going to be doing Havdalah, there'll be Chasanis, the list goes on. He says, do you understand the Achrayis that lays on my shoulders to make sure that it's done properly, halachically? And he added the Kedusha Vitara from his perspective. And he said, that was the Pachad. He said, it created such a sense of responsibility in the mind of Feish Herzog. And I think that in a sort of a way, what we're going to discuss now, we have to be not only in a position to listen to the information, but I think to together be a little bit more inspired by how we handle the food that comes into our homes and that we eat outside of our homes. I think that one of the things that Rabbi Gnat touched upon, I was just here for a few minutes, is the myriads of hashgachas that are out there. And I think it's important to really break up from a global standpoint, hashgachas. The hashgachas system in Eretz Yisrael is extremely complicated. And if you think things are difficult to sort of navigate in America, it's certainly very difficult to navigate in Eretz Yisrael. One of the case in point, is what Rabbi Gnack mentioned to you about the Mahadran issue in the hotels. And even if you're going to say, well, how many Israelis, how many didn't really go to hotels, but restaurants that there are literally on every single little guest, on every single street, you could have 5-10 eateries. And many of them, and what he was referring to, are Mahadran Yushalayim, Rabbanut Yushalayim. But it's not only in Eretz Yisrael, and many things get manufactured in Eretz Yisrael and come into America with many different hashgachas. Europe has a completely, in certain areas of Europe, they have totally different systems in giving hashgacha. To date, there are hashgachas, such as the London based in, that give hashgacha in a very unique manner. They don't even go into some of the factories necessarily. It's already changing, but there are certain number of establishments that are receiving product from industrial manufacturers that they don't necessarily have an ongoing visitation routine. What will they base it on? They'll base it on a letter that the company writes, and they affirm, and they commit themselves that this is exactly what they produce in the factory. And based on that assessment, they will give hashgacha. Now, in the London based in book, it does indicate what places they actually visit versus places that they give hashgacha based on this type of a system. I'm just mentioning in other places, in France, there are certain ways that they give hashgacha. In Italy, how are you supposed to go through a maze when you see names that you don't necessarily recognize? Today, Baruch Hashem, most of names that will come in to our homes are always coupled with the national hashgacha that we recognize, most prominently the OU. But there are a number of items that could come into our home, or we see in other homes at any given point of time, where it's going to only have the name of the Rava Machshir. Now that Rava Machshir, it could even be a little bit tempting to just open it up without even thinking twice, especially it's all Hebrew letters. So, you know, you sort of say, if it's all Hebrew letters, what could be more kosher than that? But in essence, there are differences in standards. Let me just cite to you one particular example, and I think it's an important example because it's very relevant. In Europe, the way that they produce chocolate is basically, and we're talking about what they would call a high standard, is very different than they do here in America. If they produce chocolate in different areas in Europe that they stamp as Kol Yisrael, there are two specific coolers that they use. I'm not saying that their coolers are not legitimate, but they're coolers that need to be discussed, and whether it's with your Rav or whether even it's your own personal decision, but it's something which you need to know. For example, they will kasher with chocolate. Kashering with chocolate is an issue that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that's not a milsa de pshit. It's certainly by no stretch of the imagination a very clear-cut issue. It's shar mashkin. It's not water. Also, what really constitutes something being Chol Yisrael? Does that mean that the mashkiach is there from the beginning of the chaliva all the way through the ariza, through the packing of the chocolate, or does he go in and out? Now, in America, when something is Chol Yisrael, first of all, and states that it's, for instance, parv, so the Chol Yisrael is actually Chol Yisrael with hashgacha tamidus, and the parva is made on in many hashgachas, for instance, the OU, one particular national hashgacha, they will not give hashgacha to something which you have to kasher the machinery. But in Europe, that's not the case. So how do you exactly navigate through this maze? So I think that this question was really addressed by Rabbi Gnack, and he said something which is really the only way to properly assess of what hashgachas you want in your home and you will feel comfortable with. You need, the first thing is you need to go to your Rav. Now, I must make a statement. For some reason, what has evolved over the years is that the venue of a Rav is used for Hilchish Ishis. A Rav will be asked perhaps Yaredeya questions. If you're in business and you're cognizant of how you do business, you'll present your Rav with Chosh Mishpat Shailas. If he's capable of answering, or a Hilchus Ribbis Shaila, he'll answer. If he's not capable of answering, it's his responsibility to do the proper drish of a chakir into that particular Shaila and present you with an answer that's accurate and an answer that you need to be given based on your particular needs. For some reason, kashrus has been something which has been thrown to the wayside. And you say, oh, my Rav doesn't know. You know what? I've said this, I've lectured several times since the beginning of the Zman, since Elul. And I've said this, and I think it's so true, you have to utilize the services of your Manig Ruchni. And you have to ask him, and you can't take things for granted. And if it means that you have to inspire the Rabbanim to get up, I could tell you that very prominent Rabbanim in Flatbush, who are referred to as the senior Rabbanim, I have been in their homes before they had to speak for an Olam, asking me all sorts of questions, doing the proper research. That's what has to take place. Because there's no way for people as a layperson, even if a person's beyond a layperson, to really have that information at hand other than just tapping into the resources that could supply you with that information. I want to, you know, just go to a different area, which was a question which was mentioned by a good old friend of mine, Mr. Joe Rabinowitz, that I really want to address this question. I think it's a critical question. how could you compare, you take a national organization, an organization that has a database from Tibet to Kalamazoo, has information, mashkichim, have 400 mashkichim globally, a sophisticated office of hundreds of rabbinic staff, to a little Rava Machsher that doesn't even necessarily have a computer, doesn't even necessarily have a proficiency in computers, and he's going to give Ashkoch and he's all over the place. So the first thing I want to say is that I think it's sort of, you know, myopic to, your wife is a neurosurgeon, isn't she? It's myopic to say that everybody is in one category, because we know that that's not true. There are Rabbanim Achshirim, that there are individuals that literally are very well versed with the most modern technology found in plants. If they don't know something, they will, and I use the word literally, they will hound the particular Ashkochis that are in those big factories, getting all the information, getting all the details, and they will, before they give Ashkocha on one particular plant, they will spend days. They'll bill for it, they'll charge money for it, and there's nothing wrong billing for a service. They'll do the research, they'll get the information at hand. After they've done the research, they will go down personally, and these people, some of them, some, a limited amount, are very well versed in that area of knowing how to, part of the strength of a Rava Machsher is how well you know how to do research. No different than there are people that could write papers very well, they don't know from Adam how to write a paper. But you know what? They do research so well, and they know how to connect different parts that they will see a whole picture and a very clear picture. There are Rabbanim Achshirim that might not know about every single nuance of every single thing that they give Ashkocha to, but they will take their time and they understand how to surf to be able to get to the bottom of information. And that's something which I think has to be recognized. The big danger with private Ashkochas are the following, is that if a private Ashkocha remains limited, how private Ashkochas start, a person is driven for whenever he is driven because of, we're not going to start donning why people are driven to do things. And they start with one Ashkocha and a second Ashkocha, a third Ashkocha, or they'll be part of a bigger organization and they'll splinter off. Or they'll be the heir to already a parent, a father, or a Zayda's Ashkocha, and then all of a sudden they'll branch off and there'll be another Ashkocha and people say, listen, they want to sell in Williamsburg, so they have to have a Chassidish Ashkocha, they have to have another Ashkocha, they want to sell in Monroe, they want to sell in Crown Heights, they want to sell in this region, so they have to get something, their Ashkochas. Every meat establishment, every single piece of basar, every kazayis of basar in America has almost 5 to 9 Ashkochas on it, because they have to be able to sell, and they have to be able to sell to everybody. So this is an issue which requires this, I think, basic knowledge. A Rav HaMachsher can begin with very good standards, but what happens is that when he gets a second Ashkocha, and a fifth Ashkocha, and a tenth Ashkocha, and a 20th Ashkocha, and he does not increase his staff, qualified staff, commensurate with what he's doing, because you just sort of like fall into growth, that's when the danger begins. And that's what really divides, there are really 3 categories that we're talking about navigating through Ashgachas. It's important to know that there are 3 specific categories in Ashgacha. There are national Ashgachas, which really are 4 national Ashgachas, the OU, the Chafke, the Starke, the Chafke. Then you have local Vadim, and then you will have private Ashkochas. And this really needs to be looked at carefully. And the big maila of a big Ashkocha or a communal Ashkocha is that they will have an infrastructure. If a private Rava Machsher keeps his Ashkocha limited, so then it's limited. Then of course he has the ability to handle it. But once it spreads out to a dozen places and two dozen places and three dozen places, that's when things become a little bit sketchy and you need to know more information. I just want to sort of throw out one or two other points of discussion, and then of course we could, you know, discuss this together and take questions. There can't be anything more inspiring. We talk about navigation, of knowing what you should buy and not buy. There is nothing more motivating or inspiring to a Rav HaMachshir when you call him up and question him. How many people in this room could say that more than two or three times, or maybe a half a dozen times in the last 30 years, you called a particular hashgacha that's not a candy or a cookie, but is more complicated? Maybe a caterer that does large affairs, and the Rav HaMachshir that gives hashgacha to a caterer, or for that fact, if you're going on a cruise, if you're going to a hotel for Pesach, or if you're just simply going to a restaurant that's a large restaurant that could do 600 plates an evening, or 800 plates an evening, and you just question the person in charge one time a year. You go there a dozen times a year. You go there 20 times a year. You'll go to a certain chasno just one time to ask the Rav HaMachshir, could you do me a favor? Tell me who the Mashgiach is. And you know what? There are lists of questions. It happened that I had a presentation at the Aguda convention, and at that time, I sort of put together questions that a person could ask, very pointed questions, whether you go into a pizza shop, whether you go into a fleisch sugar store, whether you go into a fish store, whether you go into a caterer. There are a basic group of questions that could be available to anybody. And that's something which you ask a Rav HaMachshir, are your standards written? Now, I ask you, any type of regulatory agency, did you ever hear of such a thing, a regulatory agency, which I guess is the closest thing to Hashgacha, that doesn't have black and white written standards? Now, standards could be flexed a little bit and need to be applied and sometimes tweaked, but basically there has to be a rubric of confined standards. You know why? Because I must tell you that as much as a reliable Hashgacha endeavors to be consistent, the greatest way to demand and really judge consistency is if you know what their rules are, what the rules of the game are. Now, after today's environment of what's happening, every hashgacha should have a set of standards for every single type of place that they give hashgacha to. Those set of standards should be public knowledge. They should be accessible, whether it's via internet or whether it's through a fax or an email when you call the hashgacha. That's what should be. People have to know that the greatest group that's empowered to demand hashgacha or to really keep us on our toes are the consumers. Now you can say, what do you mean? You're throwing the responsibility into my lap? You guys are giving hashgacha. You're the ones responsible to give hashgacha. What is this, passing the buck of responsibility? Not at all. Hashgachas are human. We, especially if you have erlicha people, we endeavor to do our best with Yerushalayim. But you know what? The ones that create a standard, whether it's a standard that will further inspire hashgachas, or whether simply the store themselves know that the consumer is a sophisticated consumer. We have to become sophisticated consumers. We have to get a basic knowledge, just like I don't think there's anyone here that puts on tefillin that doesn't know if you asach bein tefillin shel yad between tefillin shel rosh, you have to make a new bracha. Everyone knows here that you can't warm up cold liquid soup on top of a blech and shop. I mean, they're basic rules that every single firm you'd have to know. There's familiarity levels that are compulsory. Why shouldn't those familiarity levels also spread to the yisoid of every single Yiddish shtetl. Why shouldn't children be aware of these things? Why shouldn't you educate your children that when you go on vacation, you go on a trip with your class, that you should find out what, you know, when you go into a store, your child should know. Don't just go into a place and for granted just pull off something, or just don't go into a Friendly's until you know the Hashgacha. This is a chinuch. This is a chinuch which has to begin at home. And although we're all Yireim v'Shleimim, I think that this is the area that will give us a better handle on what to do for ourselves and really to be responsible to others. A question was asked before about treifa hotels, walking into a treifa hotel and giving hashgacha to a treifa hotel. Is there any issues? So first of all, I want to just clarify a certain point that Rabbi Gnack made. He said that there are hotels that have exclusive kitchens. I want to tell you, in New York City, there's no animal like that that exists. In out-of-town places, in Norfolk, Virginia, where their Jewish firm community consists of, I don't know how many Yiddish families, the Hilton Hotel has an exclusive on a they have a kosher kitchen that's locked up. There's no animal in New York City today. The Ir Ve'Ein B'Yisrael, New York City, with hundreds of thousands of frum yidden, that there was no organization yet on the face of the earth. The OU came this close with the Hyatt, and it all fell apart when a fellow named Jeffrey Becker, who used to work in the Hyatt, was accused of being the token Jew trying to push through a deal. As soon as that happened, he called me up and said, Rabbi Eisen, I'm washing my hands from this project. I'm not going to be accused of something that the Jewish community is trying to... I didn't have to elaborate on that point. But you have a situation here, and the answer is yes, there are a lot of coolists. You want to know what coolists exist in hotels? You're kashering a Eina Ben Yoimai of Isser. You're kashering a Ben Yoimai of Isser. It's almost impossible to kasher Eina Ben Yoimai because the source of the steam that's coming up, the boiler itself that is supplying the water, the heat, the steam that heats the water, that kashers the equipment, that's the Ben Yoimai. So even though the portion of kitchen that you're cooking in, every hotel has several areas of production, all the steam pipes, all the water gets sent back into the boiler. The boiler then sends steam, water that gets converted into steam to all the different areas. And you'll need to anyway be toy game the water that you're kashering in. I asked Rav Palme, I once was taking him on a ride, and I asked him, Rebbe, is there a difference between whether you take a poi game and you go ahead and use something in Eina Ben Yoimai, or do it with if you use a Ben Yoimai with a pagam, or if you take water and be poigim it from the boiler itself, inside the boiler. In other words, one being more direct and one being less direct. Is there such a difference in taking something which is Isser Ben Yoimai and making it pagam? He said he doesn't understand any difference. So here you have a situation. The answer to your question is hotels, yes. Hotels, there is a very big difference, and there's a lot to be said going into a venue, which there are a lot of today, to place that as a kosher kitchen versus hotel. Hotels, unless you have hashgacha that says, you know what, we're bringing our own equipment. We're not kashering anything in the kettles, and what we're going to do is we're going to kasher only the ovens, and we're going to do a libun on the ovens, which there's no issue of Ben Yoimai, ain't a Ben Yoimai on libun, and we'll do it that way. There are somebody wants to make a lechatchila job in a treif hotel, it's possible. It's going to cost a tremendous amount of money to do that, but it's possible because you have to shmir everybody in the hotel to be able to, for them to allow you to have everything available to you. And when we hear shmir, we're not talking about a $20 tip, you understand. So the director of food and beverage, the manager, the assistant manager, the stewards, everybody has to get oid mishmir mefurt. That's really the mitzvah in a hotel. But that's one side of the, that's one side of the picture. Now, and that could be very likely why there is a, and there are organizations that this is very much front and center for them. And they do go through, being that they need to make an event in a treifa hotel, either because of certain honorees or other cheshbonos, that they've made a decision. Well, they will expend the effort, hire the best machshirim, the best people at kasher, and they will spend, they will not fall into the job, they will spend literally weeks on planning out on how to, use the word, navigate through a system which normally doesn't allow a lechatchila standard. Lechatchila meaning specifically not using pegima. Just one more point, may inyan la inyan ba oisei inyan.
Let me ask you, excuse me, did you say it's diminished if they take over the hotel for a Pesach, where they have a latitude to be there? They don't have to just be there for a Susan and then leave, but rather they're...
There's a very big difference in going into a hotel for Pesach and taking over an entire, you know, no matter what hotel it is, and no matter how much business, you know, the average New York hotel, years back, was doing, a good hotel was doing $5 million of from business a year. Hilton, years back, was doing $5 million. That wasn't even in their peak. They were even doing more than that. No one wants to go ahead and make their entire kitchen topsy-turvy for one night. They just don't want to, even though there are a lot of one nights that accumulate, but they just, one night is a complete, you know, chaos sets in, and they're and everything just falls to the waist, and they're ready to do that. But when you go into a hotel and you're here for 10 days
or for a weekend,
weekends also not so pushy, because a weekend is just a weekend. They, very likely they will not, let me give you one example. The Rosh Shiva, Rosh Kola is making a point. The standard that exists today, and really this came, I must give Akar Satov to the OU and a tremendous, you know, recognition to Rabbi Gnack, who has always been the forerunner for the elevation of many standards. Let me give you one particular example on how the OU took the lead in many different areas and it changed the industry. They used to kosher dishwashing machines. Used to go in, what caterer wants to schlep back dirty dishes after? You have an event, you know, you have 1,000 people, you know how many dishes he used for that event? He used 8,000 dishes for that event. Who in the world wants to bring down 8,000 dishes just from logistically to pack in 8,000 dishes and send it back to the commissary and have the goyim wash dishes for the next 2 days? It's much easier, right on the spot while they're finishing with one course, and there's a lot of time in between courses, you just run it through the dishwasher and you stack it up, you take back clean dishes, you palletize them, and you send it back in your storeroom, and it's simple. Operationally, that makes sense. Any other way is just absolutely illogical. And they were going to get in a dish machine. A dish machine could take 16 hours to clean properly. Now, you could say you could clean it in 2 hours, 3 hours, but they'll be be'en in the traps. The skirts of the dishes will be caked on with tarfis. There's so many different places. You have to, in order to kasher a dishwasher, l'chatchila, you have to get it up to 190 or at least 190 to be roischin. L'chatchila, it should be 212. You know what you need? You need engineering to come in to do several boosts. You need to run several times. So there should be consecutive hot water going through the system. It takes a long time. It paralyzes a kitchen and the kitchen staff. Nobody's willing to do that, even for a weekend. For a weekend, most caterers don't wash dishes for weekends. They take back, and that's why they always have trucks. They load up. They have so many dishes, you could serve the American Army. They take so many dishes to a, you know, to an affair for a weekend affair. But for Pesach, it's different. They... people that are qualified and know their industry, they will break down the machine. They will bring in a professional company to take off the belt, because the belts, most of these machines run on belts. They're box feed. They have either they'll be box feed or they're, you know, they come up with those little plastic fingers and you just load the dishes there. Those belts could be an expanse of 40 feet, 50 feet. Who knows how long that belt could be? You have to remove the belt. To remove the belt, even engineering can't remove the belt. Engineering in a hotel does not have the know-how to remove the belt. There's special companies that service the machines. They have to come down, they have to remove the belt, they have to change the skirts, they have to then kosher it properly. It's a major issue. So over here in a Treif hotel, there are major issues that you have to be aware of. But I just want to shift over to one other thing, and then we'll take questions from there, from that point. Now that we've mentioned, and I think that it's the more and more people having the desire to go to a kosher, a completely kosher hotel, a kosher chasana hall, which are just, I think, the numbers are increasing as the years progress. What about a mashkiach tamidi? I want to tell you a reality. In most of these chayas, I don't mean animals, I mean the ateruses, most of them, rov of them, do not have hashkacha tamidis. There's no mashkiach tamidi. There's mashkiach that goes in once, twice, three times a day. To me, the OU, I worked for the OU for 10 years, that's why I keep on mentioning the OU. The OU were really the first ones to require hashkacha tamidis, like by catering was sort of given. There's so much that can happen in the course of literally 10-15 minutes. There are pieces of equipment today that just don't function with a pilot light. In many places, they don't have Jewish chefs. They have all non-Jewish staff. In a blink of an eye, food could come in. A kitchen is rumbling. Even if you're in one, in a environment where it's completely kosher, not having a mashkiach to me is an invitation of doing something which is really dangerous. Even though the mashkiach comes in, but if you have an affair that lasts 12 to 14 hours, you need somebody. I mean, it's unheard of to think that you're going to run an affair without a manager. Would anybody ever do a chasna for anyone without knowing that there's a manager that you're touching base with? I mean, it's preposterous to even think that way. Of course you need a manager. So why is it that we're less satisfied that we should have somebody, if you will, for, you know, we'll be Mishana Shame, we'll do a Shina Shame? Is it any, should we treat the kashrus dimension of the affair with any less importance than we treat the way that the buffet looks? And let me just make one last point, just to really zero in and tell you, so what's the cost of this mashkiach tamidi at an affair? Is that $1,000? I mean, that's a chunk for anybody. Maybe it's $250 on the higher end. Maybe it's $300 a year for 12 or 14 hours. So you think to yourself, the special color for the tablecloth that you put in, the raised print on the invitations, which is another $125, $150, at least that was a year and a half ago when Baruch Hashem was going to make a wedding. For raised print, you're willing to spend $150 for a mashgiach that's going to guarantee, obviously we're talking about a person that's qualified, that as close as you could get to making sure that your guests are going to eat something, which is al-sada yaisa taif. This standard is not demanded by everybody. I don't know how many of you have seen recently in the Hamodi, I think last week they printed a very unique and novel form, which really should be part and parcel. You know, you sit down with a caterer and you make a contract. And in the contract, you write in your contract what your shmorg is going to consist of, what your main is going to consist of, what type of, not only does it specify that you're having salad as an appetizer, it specifies what type of salad you're having as an appetizer. So why shouldn't we sit down at the same sitting, at the very same sitting when you're sitting with the caterer and your wife and the mechutanim, if that's what you're doing? Why shouldn't there be a forum? Why shouldn't there be a discussion? So let's talk about Ashkocha. When is the Mashkiach going to come? How are you going to control the fires? How are you going to do this? We, you know, now even though there's a Rava Machshir, you know what? You want, it's a 10 or 15 minute conversation. And it's something which I think gives us an idea of the, it sends home the chashivas of the Indian. Before I can even, I don't want to just ramble on, is there any questions? Yes.
One of the most successful, if not the most successful, store in Israel, the takeout store on the whole holiday store, has no answer. There's no answer at all in response to so many organizations trying to take advantage of the success of the store, that every week another group walked in, the Jarrah Seedham walked in, another Seedham walked in, you don't have our answer enough. And it didn't work, so they took a chance, and the Rabban supported that. So Hadad Gula, which is if not the most successful, certainly one of the most successful stores, has no Hesher, and not able to support them. But I really want to ask you a philosophical question, and it has to be personal, but don't tell me about organizations. Why does Klal Yisrael need to have a kosher cruise for us? Does the Cactus organization, do you respond to the demand of the public that wants to have certain products, and you run around and try to find a way to make a kosher for them? Or who says we need all of this? Why should there be b'chlal the ability to make a simcha in a trade hall? Why, 3 hours ago they were serving ham in this building. The waiters were touching the doors and they had ham in their hands. And they were touching the chairs. These cats in the chairs. The waiter here touched it, now he's touching you. What do you need it for? What is Klal Yisrael need it for? Why are you supporting it? That's why I'm like this, so forget about it. I don't understand. What is the purpose of a kashrus organization? To tell me that something is kosher, to concentrate on what we need, and finish it. Don't go running around the world and telling me that this product is kosher and that product is kosher, and there should be kosher fest with a million new products. That's what happens. Who needs it?
Joe, I'm so proud. You're speaking like a Rosh Yeshiva. You're great. This is terrific. I'm not being facetious. Now, I want to tell you something, Joe. I was in Miri Yeshiva, sitting in a room. Listen to me. I was in the room. Listen. Excuse me. You preface your question by saying you want my personal opinion. You're getting it whether you like it or not. I was sitting in a room with Rav Shmuel Birnbaum and Rav Aaron Schechter and Rabbi Epstein, Rav Chaim Epstein, and a bunch of other Rosh Yeshivas, and they were discussing this issue. You were not invited to that meeting. No, you were not. And one, I forgot which one of the Rosh Yeshivas said, "Ver darf ale dizachin. Let's open a couple of stores and let's take in a certain product. Let's make it mahadrin. We'll open up a bagel store. You'll open up a bakery. You'll open up a restaurant. You'll have a caterer. You'll have a meat store." He said, "It's a gnug is gnug." I could have sworn that you were sitting under a table. That's exactly what they said.
That's the way I told them.
Okay. No, but that really, you know, you're right. But as far as the Hashgacha is responding, I want to tell you something.
What is the OU's
philosophy is no different than all the other national Hashgacha's philosophy. As long as it's not halachically incorrect, and you don't have to make, and if their standards are not compromised, their standards of kashrus. Now, I want to tell you something. Listen, there has been an ongoing, when I was in the OU, there was a push and pull between, you know, the OU, for example. I could only tell you because that's the organization I worked for 10 years, is made up of many different areas. There's a lay group, there's a lay leadership, there's Rabbanim, and the twine do meet from time to time. They do cross. And there are a lot of issues that are, I don't mean to say that they're peripheral issues or ancillary issues, because they're not, because that indicates that they're not as important to others, but mixed swimming. What about a hotel, having different activities? You know, other things in the hotel. Do we want to give Ashgacha and have our name? Do we want to give Ashgacha in a conservative shul? Do we want to give Ashgacha in a reform shul? And people are going to come in. They're going to say drushes in the reform shul. They're going to speak. There's going to be speeches. I mean, there are, what you said really borders on so many different areas. You know, it's not only what we said before, a tznius issue. If there's a, on the package, there's a promiscuous picture on the package. Should they give Ashgacha? Or should, you know what? In my personal opinion, I think it's mechur adav if they even touch it. That means that an OU is going to share, or a chofke or a starke is going to share the same front area as, you know, as the picture. And who says, you send your child and you say, oh, pick me up a box of Cheerios. And they pick up a box of Cheerios, and as a hachana to your son going to learn in the Beis Medrash, he sees, boom, this is what he sees in the morning for breakfast. I mean, it's a Shrek, of course. And what he said before, what Rabbi Gnack was referring to before about Pepsi, that was Michael Jackson, the god Michael Jackson. It's also to even say his name in the Mokum Kaddish. This he was the guy that he was the evolution from the ape to the ape. You know what? And so you'll say maybe Santa Claus is more generic. Where do you draw the line? You know what? Even though that's a hard issue to address, where do you draw the line? But there are certain lines that Aliba de Kuli Alma are stepping over the line. And you know what? I do agree with you. For every single type of mishigas they have, the candies, I'm telling you, they have candies today that I wouldn't have dreamt of even having when I was growing up. I mean, all the sorts of these bizarre candies. Who needs it? They're dastas. But you know what? It's a consumer-driven market. That's really what it's all about. I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. There should be organizations. But the problem is that the practical, the pragmatic side of this problem is, if any national hashgacha takes the position and says that, you know what, we are going to be introducing into America something which never existed. We are going to be a wholesome hashgacha. Wholesome means that everything that you said plus, that's all we're giving. First of all, they will go out of business in a short while, because all the companies, all the other hashgachas will not jump on board. There'll be two or three other hashgachas that don't want to say, and you're right, so maybe at the end they'll prevail. You know what, but they have
to.
You're right. If a person has the thoughts, the wild dreams that you can endeavor on bringing them up all on the same page on the many multiplicity of issues, it's never going to happen. But if you choose fundamental issues,
right,
it's possible that they could come together. But you just need somebody to take charge. Oh, yeah, that's okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the compliment.
Can I get back to the question before?
Yeah.
Frum hall, a frum caterer, mashgiach that's not committee, checks all the items that go in. Other than Bishul Akum, what pitfall do you see?
I'll tell you a pitfall, right? Maisa Shoya in one of the atarises, Maisa Shoya, that they ran out of fish, and all of a sudden, you know, for some crazy reason, the guy went out.
Who was the guy?
One of the porters went out. One of the staff went out and bought fish. No simonim, ground fish.
What wouldn't the manager be in charge of that?
The manager's out on the floor making sure that the machatenist is happy. One of the staff members. Go out. Not one of the head people. Somebody tells them, listen, I ran out of fish, go and buy fish. I ran out of this, run to ShopRite, run to this store, run to that store.
Someone in charge.
Yeah, the person in charge, they are so teridi b'malachton. You never were in the kitchen at the moment at the Shas, at the Kishrei Milchama. It's like Kishrei Milchama. You stand in the wrong place, you get mowed down like a bull. You know, boom. You get flattened out there's many pitfalls. Bishul Akum is not a small thing. It's gigantic. There's constant cooking all over the place. Goyim bringing stuff to eat.
That's one isolated thing that could be corrected. People will go out and buy something and come back.
Whether it's vegetables, whether it's Bishul Akum, whether it's outside food, whether it's in a place, if it's a place that does multiple stuff, let's say milchik and fleishik, which some do. I mean, there's an issue of kelim.
If you have a mashgiach to meet the other side and the person is not a shomer shabbos, what would you say the quality?
That is, first of all, that really depends on two things. First of all, it begins with the policy of the particular group. I mean, the hashgachas that have a policy not to give out.
So in terms of your experience, you say that's also.
There are people that are obviously not observant, that either have a tremendous business ethic. Either their business ethic stems from respect for the kashrus, or the business ethic really stems from business ethics, meaning that they want to protect their business, and they know that the smartest thing for their business is to play by the rules. And the Av Mashgiach Tamidi, I mean, it does work. I mean, it's all over the place. I mean, it's in the OU, it's in local Ashkochas, they will give Ashkocha. I mean, local Ashkochas are, I think, less... You know, they're veering away from that, giving Ashgacha to a non-Shomer Shabbos caterer, because catering is a very, it's a dynamic, it changes, it's not, what's today is not...
So busy, you probably understand that if he wants to slip something in, Mashgacha is not going to really do much.
True, but, you know, it's certainly going to be a strong preventative measure. Mm-hmm. A strong preventative, yes. I thought I came here not to be in the five towns today. And now you bring me back into the five towns?
That was how you were billed as the
Yeah, I was billed as that. I work in the five towns, not that I'm going to bring the controversies there. No, but I will answer both questions, believe me. The first question is that HaKol Tzorech L'Mori Chitaya. Everyone needs, you know, the one that supplies the wheat, you know, very apropos to this week's Pasha. Everybody needs the Yosef who Hashal to a Mashbir. I mean, the national Hashgachas are indispensable. Now, a local Hashgach, for instance, the Hashgach in the five towns, when I went over from the OU to the five towns and sitting down with a community of Rabbanim coming from many different, you know, persuasions and chinuch, and trying to get everybody on the same page to the best of my ability, I came up with a proposal. Let's take one national hashgacha and let's take our standards and as much as possible conform to those standards. That means if we ever have a shayla of acceptability of hashgacha, not acceptability of hashgacha, if there's a particular standard that we need to follow, we will look and we will link to that larger, you know, resource that is necessary to operate. And the decision was, in the case of the five towns, from Far Rockaway, was that we would link to the OU. Now, that was a practical decision for my part. First of all, I knew the system, and I came from there, and the OU is, of course, the biggest of the national shkachas. And they're the easiest, I think, to deal with in terms of, you know, especially when you're from there, because they are, you know, everybody's in charge of a particular area, and, you know, it's very much departmentalized, and it's very organized in that sense. You know, so every local Ashgacha, in order to be able to have consistency in what they do, they need to link in to some type of a resource, and if you will, some type of a consulting, you know, pattern with the big boys, so to speak. Now, as far as you meant what is going on with that particular Hashgacha, I mean, of course, this is not something which, you know, I'm going to be detailed on. But basically what happened at that particular place was that there was a series of kashrus violations that took place over a period of time. And it just became very apparent that we could not be in a position to certify the place any longer based on those violations. And there was a unified position. It was a unified position of something which I think will eventually bring Mashiach, because 36 Rabbanim signed on one piece of paper that they were all b'deya achas of making the decision that they could not feel that this place is certifiable any longer. And that's really the long and short of it, and literally in a nutshell, of what happened in that particular place, which has gotten a lot of media coverage and has become very popular and well known from that. Yes. I'm not saying. I think you mix up two points. They do check many of them besides London Basin. They do check the factories. That's not the issue. The issue was with the kashering and with the Chol Yisrael designation of Yitzhak Nichnas. I think that from what I heard just recently, just about a week ago, that they've made a decision not to kasher with chocolate in some European. I think it's Schmerling's in particular. I did not do any, you know, follow up with that, but I think that this is just a case in point of what we said before, of how companies respond to consumers. The reason why it's always a consumer-driven market is because the consumers are the ones that put up the money. They're the ones that make these companies successful and wealthy. And when the consumers are screaming or they hear enough complaints, after a while, if they're hearing enough complaints, you know what they say? They say, forget about it. You know, let's just change. Let's see what we can do to change. I think that might have been the impetus in that particular issue you're talking about. Yes? Yeah, yes.
And my understanding was that the OU manual, at least what was put out to the lay public, was that certain vegetables could not be nibzak. For example, the tips of asparagus. And this was enforced on a lot of articles and a lot of things to shame the OU and to shame the OU that you can't do it. You have to cut the tips off because the little things are too much to eat them and you can't get up underneath. If every single high-end restaurant that I go into with whoever's Hester it is, okay, all the national brands, every place I go, they have asparagus, they have the dip. And at the same time, so you're telling me, and I asked about this, and they said, well, our mashgichim know something that we can't explain to the public how to do it. So a balbusta can't do it, but their mashgichim can do it, and at the same time, they tell me that the mashgichim are tremendously overburdened in a restaurant. If you ever go look for a restaurant, a mashgich in a restaurant, he's running around, he can never find it.
First of all, I think it's not all right. You're assuming a premise. I can't say this every. I can't imagine. Maybe you're right. I wasn't in city restaurants, certainly in the back of the kitchens, you know, for years since I left the OU, almost 7 years ago. I can't tell you what's in doing the back. All I know is that I don't believe it's in every restaurant, and you understand that as far as mashgichim are concerned, mashgichim really have to be consistent, and that's what I said to you before. Consistency is everything. I want to tell you what I, Baruch Hashem, had a matnas elikim of an idea in the five towns that I did. Every hashgacha should do it in the country that has any type of a large scale of responsibility. No, all men are not created equal in their proficiency of performing. There's some people that are better in doing things than others. We know it from our own children. There's certain children that can do certain tasks and certain can't. Mashkichim also, mashkichim madregis yesh. And I mean, obviously you shoot for a goal that there's a certain range of acceptability of a person's work performance, and they have to fit into that range. But there's a range, and the range sometimes could be a pretty large range. I took in the five towns, one of the best guys that understood the sugya of Bedikas Yerakas well. Not only did he understand it well and performed his job for years in a magnificent way, but he was also a good teacher, a very good good communicator. And what I did is that he works a certain amount of time in stores. I said, I want you to work for another 10 to 15 hours a week. We will pay you a premium fee, double of what you're earning in the store. And I want you to go around to all the stores, all the 15 and 20 mashgichim that work in the other stores, and do the following. Number one, check the water pressure. Number two, check the lighting. Number three, check the area of where they're doing bedikas yiraka, that they're not under pressure, they're not overburdened, they're not getting shoved around by some $650 an hour porter checking, washing dishes. And I want you to check that their performance is sufficient, and more than anything, I want you to check if they're doing it consistent and in consonance with our policies. And I created a form, and he is going around, he's already working for 2 or 3 months, and I want to tell you my stuff that happened. We hired a guy that was in need of work, and he started to check vegetables, and he did a good job at the beginning, but this is like you want to know about jobs that you don't necessarily want to go into, this one job that you might not want to go into, because it zaps you, it takes out your koichas, you can sit in there for 4 to 6 hours, it's avoidus perach. But this guy, slowly, he did it well, and he was proficient, and we said, you want to do some extra hours? Yeah. And he, all of a sudden, from starting at 5 hours, he was already working 15 hours. And already, I heard from Ashkichim that, he came late here, and he didn't do his job there, and it was very funny. Like, one of the things that we do is that scallions, the way that you deal with scallions, if you have to cut them horizontally, you cut them vertically from top to bottom, and you take them under a heavy stream of water, you loosen the bottom portion, the bulb, and because the thrips are in between them, they're very not adhesive. So the slightest contact of water, boom, they just jump off. And you have to rinse it under water. The biggest raya, if Mashgiach didn't check it well, is if his scallions are whole, are intact. I mean, it's like, so to speak, you don't have to put in too much thought. You walk into a place and you see them using it, you say, oh, the rabbi did it, and it's not cut. It's a dead giveaway. And we were seeing by this Mashgiach this several things. Anyway, he calls me one day, this fellow that's doing the checking. He said, I found a complete cluster of broccoli, and it wasn't even opened. It wasn't boiled, because we boiled the broccoli for 2 or 3 minutes. It wasn't boiled, it wasn't opened, it wasn't done. And when it went over, he said, yeah, the rabbi did it. So anyway, by that time already, I called, there was a tumult. I called the guy up, and I said, I want to meet with you. He said, no. He said, I know why you're calling me. I said, listen. I said, come into my office. We'll talk a little bit. And, he didn't come in. He was supposed to come in on Wednesday. He didn't come in Wednesday. It was Thursday. I didn't want to ruin a Shabbos. So I decided, I told him, just do things carefully. Was mechazik him. And had this guy also go around to look over his work. And I made the decision on Monday, he's going to come to my office. I'm going to do something which I don't think I ever did. I'm going to fire him. Because it was too radical to leave over something. This was after a bunch of stuff, but this was a makib patish, to take something and serve it, something which is a mir amotzi, which could have to learn to be machshel a person, and then to know. And he apologizes, like, I don't know what got into me, I was in a rush. Thus it nish gefailed. So I said, I got to make a decision. I called him up on Monday to come to the office. And before I was going to call him up on Monday, before I chanced Monday, he called the guy that works and he says he's quitting. So I said, Rabban Shalom, thank you. I didn't have to fire a person. He quit on his own. The point that I'm making is in response to your question. These are things which you have to be consistent. You should get up, I don't mean get up physically, send the OU, and it will be with Payelis, and send and CC. You want to know a secret on how things get done in fire speed? I'm going to tell you a little secret. Rabbi Gnack is tremendously responsible. When he sees something in writing come to his desk, it's like he sees a bull, like a red flag. Like he doesn't let up. He will go on to that person that's responsible for that area. He will call them every day to do it. Fix the problem. They fix the problem. They fix the problem. Write an email to Rabbi Gnack and say in your books that this is a policy that I heard, and that is a policy. You know why I know that's a policy? Because I wrote it with the heskim of all the rabbonim. That with the asparagus tips, that the tips and the sides are shaved off. It has to look like it came from Williamsburg. That's it. Shaven completely. And without that, they don't accept it. Now, could there be a mashgiach that was born in Jupiter or Venus that has a certain secret Kabbalah on how to do it? So that shouldn't be acceptable. Because if the other 20 places can't do it, this one can't do it also. Write an email and say, you came to the West High School, you gave a wonderful drush, and I want to bring something to your attention. I guarantee it will be taken care of within a week. Violations could occur. No, the Mashgiach himself wasn't performing properly. It depends. Some were, some weren't. Yes. That's a very good question. You know how you assess? It's not so difficult to assess it in the reference to a very, an area that's a very heavily and densely Jewish populated area. The real challenge is if you go to an out-of-town place where it doesn't have such a large community, how do you go ahead and assess the reliability of Hashgacha? You have to go to the Rabbonim of the community that are in the know, that understand, that the Erlich Rabbonim, everybody knows who are the ones that their word is a word, and they have a lot of seichel, and they're very wise people, and they're very balanced people. And you go to them, for instance, if you want to find out if you're traveling somewhere in Philadelphia, and you want to know there are maybe 2-3 hashgachas in Philadelphia. You want to know who's in Philadelphia? There are individuals. There's a fellow named Rabbi So and So who is well known, that he knows the kashrus industry. And you call him up. There's really no other really accurate barometer or gauge to know what is the Erlich Hashgachas unless you turn to the Rabbanim of the community, because that, of course, has to be, a Yesoid, one of the Amudim that the Rabbanim are responsible for. Yes? I would rather not get into a detail. I have guides. I'm happy to send you one, written guide. And also, there's another thing about the guides that I want to make a point. I think is a very important point, that many times these issues with which vegetables can be checked and can't be checked, and certain things which seem to be inconsistent, they do change. In other words, that many times what happens over the course of years, there'll be people that will come up with certain ways that will be able to either make the particular vegetable more effectively checked and more user-friendly in the methodology of how to do it. Or alternatively, they'll find out something which really they felt could not be checked properly. And some really creative mashgiach, who really is a thinker on how he does his job, will say, hey, I developed a system, it makes sense, and run it by professionals, and all of a sudden, if it's a good idea, it will spread from one hashgacha to the next hashgacha. And all of a sudden, what seemed to be something which was taboo or something which couldn't be properly inspected 3 years before for a period of 10 years, all of a sudden is being used all over the place. So it's something which also you need to get updated information. Yes? Again, that, what was the question?
Bag, what's the bag broccoli or other types of vegetables that need to be rinsed? They have both, they put that bag broccoli, they claim they rinsed it well, they got rid of it. The OU also gives much cover for different broccoli. Is there a difference, procedure, the washing procedure, or what they do to certify that it's butter?
The only thing that I could respond in terms of that, there are a lot of companies out there, and it's going to be impossible for me to go through every company. But there's a general, I think that there's a general response to that. And the general response is that there are certain companies that have individuals involved in this area in particular. You're talking about broccoli and other specialty items that are normally need to be checked, and they're produced in a commercial capacity. You have to look who are the ones that are dealing with the production. In other words, in the case of Bodek happens to have a very talented staff of Rabbanim Hashem that work with the OU, Rabbi Gissinger and others that are real mumchim. So if you need to assess, do I take this or do they take that, you really have to do some inside information and finding out who's behind it, what's the scope of the people's experience, How are they actually doing it? That's another thing to call up and say. How do you do? Obviously, they're not checking. Frozen broccoli is not every piece is checked. It's just random inspection of very small percentages. But it also depends where they get it and what time of the year they're getting it, who they're sending, who's the head of the team, who's doing the production. These are issues. So if it's under a reliable national hashgacha, they obviously have been, they've gone through all those steps in making that decision. You know, but if you need to know that very detailed question of what's better, then you need to invest, you know, some time and effort in finding out particulars, and then bring it to somebody's attention and let them make that assessment. Yes.
If there are Baal Batim families that feel, you know, they want that nutrition, they want the health benefits of lettuce, they desire it strongly for their diet, would you recommend, based on your experience, that they should nonetheless avoid it, or is it doable properly in the home, either with soaking, with vigilance, with soaps, special soaps? What would your conclusion be?
First of all, your first question is that should you avoid it? Absolutely not. You should definitely make sure it's part of the diet of your home. In my house, if you come to spend Shabbos in my house, you will see that there's romaine lettuce and iceberg lettuce, and when things are a little less hectic on Erev Shabbos, we'll even, you know, we like spinach, you know, fresh spinach. It's just a matter of just, you know, reestablishing time parameters of how much time you have to put in to do it. You know, I had an experience about 15 years ago. One of my wife's friends, you know, a married couple, came to my house for Shabbos, and she brought a magnificent home-baked cake. And I asked Adina, I said, this cake is magnificent. How much time did you spend, you know, doing? She says, oh, it took me about a half an hour to bake and about 6 hours to decorate it. You know, the point is that it was important for her, so she spent 6 hours. These things that you mentioned, lettuces, are very important to everybody. I mean, they're healthy. You know, people that are health conscious, diet conscious, should use it. And there are methodologies that you could use that you could spend 45 minutes to an hour between, let's say, romaine lettuce and iceberg lettuce, and even another types of lettuce if you like, and you could have enough product to feed yourself for 4 or 5 days. Now, how do you do it? I mean, I'm not going to get into the particulars. You know, there are pamphlets. One of the pamphlets that I put out about a year ago, I put it out, I designed it in such a way where my goal was that an eighth grader, somebody at 13 years old, should be able to follow it and do it properly. You know, there is the clarity, the consistency, the very simple step-by-step instructions. And if you use it just as a total sidebar, if you buy yourself a spinner, and after you do whatever halachic steps you need to do, and you spin off the water, and it's dry, and you put it in a Ziploc, it could last fresh for how many days? Last 3-4 days. Fresh, as if you would have it yesterday. There's no reason why you have to deny yourself. You know, when I give lectures about vegetables, I tell leibasi ella lahater and not leesar. You know, koyecha tatera difa. You have to. People should avail themselves to 90% to 90% of fresh produce on the market could be done with pretty much ease. It's just you have to know how to allocate your time and know the methodologies that need to be used. Yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, I think what you did is you sort of, you know, put several things together in one, you know, in one ball. I just want to take a moment just to divide, you know, the parts of your question. Number one, Ali Katif is an Eretz Yisrael greenhouse grown product. Bodek is a domestic non-romaine lettuce. It's like either cabbage or iceberg lettuce. And they do have romaine once in a while, which does come from, sometimes if it comes from Eretz Yisrael, I don't know if it's coming from greenhouses either. It might be coming from greenhouses. That I'm not sure. And as far as the other point that you mentioned is the greenhouse grown in general, not the Ali Katif. So the first thing is that the Ali Katif has a good hashgacha, And what they, the Ashkacha really is addressing, that their method of growth has obviated the presence of thrips and aphids. Those are insects which are germane to the vegetable itself. They don't come from it, even though they migrate from the soil, but those are insects which are specifically, you know, they feed off these greens. Flies, which Ali Katif recommends it should be washed off with a heavy stream of water, that's what they're concerned with, because when they pack, you know, it's greenhouse grown, but when they start packing and taking, then flies could come in at a certain point of time. That's what they're telling you to wash off from. Now, as far as other greenhouse products, other than Ali Katif, you rarely have to know who the Rav Machshir is. That there are certain people that are renowned experts. One name that a person should look out for in from Eretz Yisrael product is Rav Moshe Vaya. He is the world's expert. And as far as Bodek is concerned, Bodek does produce, when they do, they produce domestic product. They produce it under Hashgacha Tamidis. They produce it with the regular, in a regular factory, but with a private label, their own label. And the reason why that product, their product might be a Mohammedan product, if it's useful for you, and I say useful, because it's shredded. So shredded has a very limited use when it comes to catering. You could maybe sprinkle it under something, you know, and it stays there. But, you know, the other brands making chunky things, which people like to bite into something chunky, and it's more, much more versatile in terms of its use. You know, the reason why there's a myelin, the shred, is because number one, it's done by Hashgacha Tamidis. Number two, this way they are careful from bottlenecking. You know, certain areas that they just keep on dumping the stuff, it just bottlenecks. Secondly, is that they shred it. So there's much less of a chance going into a turbulent flume that those insects, those thrips or aphids, are going to be able to jump onto those, that skinny, shredded lettuce, versus when the stuff is chunky, it's the flume doesn't agitate it as much. A good gesund yard to everybody.
Yeah.